Be fearless in trying new things, whether they are physical, mental, or emotional, since being afraid can challenge you to go to the next level. Rita Wilson.
Welcome to Finneytown Local School District's official podcast, the only place to listen to the in-depth stories from our students, staff, and community members. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Finneytown Wildcats official podcast. I'm your host, Eric Muchmore, joined, as always, by my co-host, Mike Kennedy. MK, how are you today?
Excellent. The weather is starting to turn back to warm, so I'm excited about that.
I know. We were teased a couple weeks ago with that 80-degree weather. Here we are, back to winter coats in the morning.
And we're almost in May.
Right.
I mean, how did that happen?
Just when I think I can put the winter coats of my kids down in the basement, you know, storm. I got to go get them right back out.
Well, you could just make them walk out in the cold, you know. But
I try to be a good father.
Okay.
But we're not here to talk about kids and winter coats. We're here to talk about PBL math. And our guest today is a math teacher here at the secondary campus. He is the coach of the academic team. He is a Boston sports aficionado. He is a moonlighter as a stock market analyst, moonlights in that realm. And he did take a risk with PBL this year. Our guest today, Mr. Phil Farr. Phil, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Wow, that was quite the intro there.
It may be my best one of all the podcast episodes we've done, but yeah.
Yeah.
Phil, we're glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
And so I know Mike Rosa and Mike Kennedy, they've partnered with you this year for a PBL project in which class, which course?
Algebra 2.
Algebra 2. Okay. And you've been teaching all kinds of math courses for a long time now here at Finneytown and prior to here at Purcell Marion High School.
Yep, yep.
And this year, taking a risk with PBL. So tell us the story behind this risk with PBL this year.
Well, as Mike and Mike, the Mike Squareds, came to me and I think and said, you know, what do you want to do for a project? Or maybe we're at a math meeting. I don't know. And I just thought, I've done projects typically in physics for a long time. And as we all know, projects are, there's deeper learning. There's learning sort of outside the normal math stuff. Oh, sorry about that. And so I thought, what the heck, you know, this old dog can try to learn some new tricks and learn some things about how to really approach project-based learning. And so Algebra 2 is well-suited for that because Algebra 1, you learn the rules of math. Geometry is this other thing about space and area and such. But Algebra 2 is where we see the math functions that are in everyday life. And so if a kid, you know, had struggles in math, they can at least appreciate, hey, somebody somewhere knows this, and that's good because, you know, we see exponentials in the virus, you know, COVID virus.
Right.
We see root functions in the way gravity works with pendulums. And so at any rate, so Algebra 2 is great for describing the past, using math to describe the past, or using the math to predict the future. And so it lends itself to kind of project learning. So I thought, I mean, I can learn something and maybe get the kids to learn something, get excited about it.
Nice. So Mike and Mike are the PBL facilitators for the district. They work K-12, obviously here at the secondary campus. And part of their work, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, you're the facilitator, not me, but you meet with staff. It's not like you just come in on the day of the teaching or the project. There's a lot of work that goes into the planning, and that's where you and your role really function. And so, Phil, talk to me, Mike, talk to me about what a planning meeting looks like for a PBL project.
Well, for me, jump in here, Phil, but it's kind of an explosion of ideas together. You know, I've learned a lot about math through working with you, and we've learned a lot about how students are learning, and we've learned a lot about how to run a project for math specifically. Because math's one of those tricky subjects, right? Where mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you got the numbers in there, how do we find the real world in the numbers? And so the way that we work together is, let's find a project that might excite the kids. Your first project, Phil. Talk about your first project.
The very first one I do is just based on lines. It's I printed off houses in Finneytown, of varying size, a two-bedroom, three-bedroom, and I just tell the kids, tell me the price that this house should sell for. And so the kids have to plot it. And, of course, I don't use address data. It's just house number one,
right.
House number two.
Sure.
But and I limit all the details they can have, number of baths, square footage, and allow the kids to play with the numbers and see what they come up with for the price of the house. So that was the first one.
Yeah, and I remember that project, too, because I came in and kind of looked at that project a little, because you said, hey, is this PBL, is this? And then from there, we kind of jumped into a different conversation.
Right. Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, that's the evolution of it. Yeah,
yeah.
How did you do this?
You remember
I forgot
that?
How. Yeah, and then you said, okay, what might you have next? And I said, okay, well, when we do baseball, or when we do polynomials. Polynomials are graphs that have lots of ups and downs. They have wiggles, x to the 6th, x to the 5th. I said, well, typically I do this one specific, I call them math labs. They weren't really projects, but I call them math labs.
Uh-huh.
And we would do this one specific one on home runs. And so then he says, well, can we open it up? And I liked having them, because they had been working with other teachers on projects, so they're kind of like the subject matter experts. And so he had a nice structure to approaching it and go, okay, so what's your kind of high-level goal for this, and then how do we break that down into miles? And so it was just really nice collaborating with them. I learned a lot. I still got a lot to learn, obviously. But, yeah, so I thought it was
really learned
nice.
A lot, too. I mean, you kind of jumped in with some things. Like, he used the ICANN statement rubrics that we had taken from that
nice,
book
yeah.
from Jennifer Priatt. And you kind of jumped into that, and you didn't know this, but you really used those rubrics for each milestone. And some other teachers have used it for just a couple milestones, but you really kind of took that. I didn't say much, but you just like ran with that rubric. How was your experience with those rubrics?
Yeah, because that is, to me, that helped me form what I needed them to get out of this. You know, I can take data, I can throw it into a spreadsheet. I can create a trend line. This is all the things that, I mean, if you're dealing with numbers on a regular basis and you're trying to predict or describe the past, you have to have these skills. You know, one of my prior lives was I did, you know, financial work for, you and I talked about businesses.
Yeah.
And so I had to do a lot of spreadsheet work. And so I tried to make the kids do that and understand, you know, that math isn't just, oh, I got a problem in a textbook. You know, it's... Yeah, so those ICANN statements, it's like, okay, I need the student to be able to do this, and then I need them to be able to know how to research and Google. And there's so many things I learned that, you know, you forget, they're kids. You know, they haven't been exposed
right.
to this. And so we have to, and you helped me with kind of really making sure I had structured, like, how are you going to scaffold this, and what are you going to do? And your questions always made me think way too much. Yeah, I had, you know, I'd be driving home going, okay, how am I going to do this? Yeah.
Well, that's cool to hear the questions and the collaboration between the two of you. I mean, unfortunately, when I was a teacher here in an English classroom, I never got the opportunity, or I guess created the opportunity, to collaborate with someone that closely on an intense project. The structure just wasn't there. We didn't have facilitators. So to hear that, you know, Phil, and you and I started here about the same time.
Yeah.
About, I don't know, 17 years ago?
Yeah, a long 18? Time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, when we were kids.
One of us was a kid.
But it's just really cool to hear just the behind-the-scenes effort that goes into planning for those moments that we have with the kids to make them meaningful. And the rubrics, the ICANN rubrics, you know, thinking through helping the kids understand the path or the process to learning something bigger. And so that's cool to hear. Now, tell me about one of my favorite days this year. Is I was actually looking for Mike and Mike in the afternoon. It was after school. I popped through Hafner's classroom into the media center trying to find these guys because we were working on something else. I walk in, and there's about 100 pizzas, 100 kids, desserts, and you're there. And you have all these kids in the media center after school eating pizza, excited to be there, which is not common.
Yeah.
What's the story with that?
Well, let me back up a second because I want to talk about, as I mentioned, I used to do this as a math lab, and I had one area of baseball. It was they were supposed to research an area of baseball, mm-hmm. and again, use a polynomial to describe the past. Did your thing go up and down? Why did it go up and down? And the intent was that they use math to highlight periods of time that they have to look into and go, you know, what happened in baseball at this time? What happened in the world? To explain why that went up and why did it come back down. And I was comfortable with my little home run thing. But the mics said, how about you open it up and let's get some areas that the kids can maybe choose their own. That made me greatly uncomfortable because I view teaching sort of like the law. I don't ask a question I don't already know the answer to. And so to just open it up, I felt like, oh, my God, where is this going to go? And it was the coolest thing. I'm getting goosebumps as I talk about this. It was the coolest thing to see kids look into race and the race, the structure of the graphs and race and the story behind it. And I still remember J.T. Cleghorn did hit by pitch. And I was amazed that he found that the graph of batters getting plunked by a pitcher exactly correlated with the graph of home runs, which means, in my mind, you hit a home run off me. The next time you're up, I'm not letting you hit it again. I plunk you and put you on first. I mean, it was there was all kinds of little moments like that out of my great discomfort with, oh, God, how's this going to go, just was really enlightening. Yeah, yeah. Oh. So that was cool. That was a cool moment. And there were many like that. Okay, so back to your question about after school.
Yeah. Well, how in the world did you get almost every single one of your students to show up after school for an academic conversation?
They're teenagers. You have to feed them. So that was the...
Okay, rule number one.
If you offer them food, they'll show up for anything.
Yeah, and there were so many boxes of Papa John's there, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, so I said, hey, show up and I'll at least feed you. And the intent of that was that they were supposed to present to each other, because I was, again, this is outside of, they were going to speak to adults, and as I told the kids, I said, we're partners in this. You know, I'm new at this. You're new at this. We have to make sure we put our best foot forward when it comes to your presentation in front of adults. And so I said, you know, I want you to practice pitching to each other. It did not go as I had hoped because kids just don't have the experience with presentations to be able to really authentically, or I didn't structure it well. I don't know. But to judge somebody else's presentation and know the questions to ask. And so, I would call that a fail, but I got everybody to show up and they at least got a chance to go, oh, I have to have my presentation ready. So maybe it helped the kids move their stuff along. But from what I expected out of it, I just didn't get what I was hoping for. But that's you know, like anything, you learn, you know, you make mistakes or you look at how you can change it the next time.
I mean, you took a risk.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and the kids showing up is a big, 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 big plus for us. And I think you're right. Like, we reflect on, like, how could we have structured that differently? But we wouldn't have known for next year's project how to do it unless we went through that.
Yeah.
You know, so that it's an evolution of time and experience. And I think the risk that you took, like, that will pay off. We'll retool that.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we know, you know, when you do stuff, nothing ever goes smoothly. If it does, that's the rarity when everything goes, oh, that was exactly as I hoped. It worked great. You know, there's always little hiccups that you go, okay, how can I avoid those in the future? And what can I do to, you know, optimize the kids' time, our time, their learning, that kind of stuff.
So that gets us to our second question. What moments from your PBL experience, specifically with the students, stand out to you? I know you mentioned the thing about J.T. Cleghorn, but what other moments stand out to you from start to finish?
You know, when we having, I don't know, whatever it was, 60, 80, 100 kids doing presentations, you can't get your eyes on everything. You can't get to every kid to kind of give them a scrubbing on, oh, maybe say this differently. I remember walking away just glowing inside. I was so proud of how those kids did in front of adults. I mean, I got kids, you know, we have different types of students, obviously, you know, introverts, extroverts. And there were kids that spoke more. I think they spoke more words in that presentation than I've seen them speak all year in class. and just, I was so proud of the kids and how they presented, the ones I got to see. So that was, to me, really filled me with a lot of joy and going, okay, you know. So when you came and said, hey, would you like to do it again? I didn't tell the kids. I said that I volunteered because the kids were all like, "Oh, thank God, we're done with this." And it's like, no, I've re-upped you for another for another one.
We signed another contract,
right? We got to deliver again as best we can. You know, hopefully it goes better than the last one because I've learned a little something.
Oh yeah,
but sure. That's what I took away. I was just so proud of the kids and handling questions that were, you know, hardball and meant to be, you know, softballs, and how they just, yeah, they always make me proud. Proud that I work here, proud of what the kids do. Yeah.
That's cool.
That is cool. I think when you're telling that story, I mean, we had alumni members come to your presentation,
oh,
and other
right.
public
yeah,
audience
yeah.
members, mm-hmm. and the shout outs that they gave to the students afterwards was just joy. Like, they really enjoyed hearing the students talk about their projects and their R values and, you know, I learned what an R value was again
yeah.
through those
yeah.
presentations. So, I mean, yeah, what you're saying is true. Like, we learned a lot. We have a lot to learn. But some of those students that don't say anything, that was an opportunity for them to get a chance to, like, do it and say something and present. And I know some of them were nervous, but, like, some of them were, like, really shining and that we wouldn't have expected, I guess.
Yes, that was it. Yeah, somebody that you're like, how well do they really know the material? And then they just came off just very smooth and comfortable, you
yeah.
know, they, or at least they looked comfortable. I thought, wow, that's, because
yeah.
as a high school kid, well, heck, I'm uncomfortable doing this. I don't want to kind of put myself out front.
Yeah.
I'd rather just kind of be in the background.
Yeah.
And to see some, you know, teenager who hasn't got, you know, our life experience get out there and do it, it
yeah.
just makes me, I don't know, proud, hopeful, not
yeah.
worried about the future kind of stuff.
Well, it's funny because I remember you saying to me, like, it's a couple days before, I was like, how are you feeling? Like, how's it going to go? And he's like, I don't know. Like, working through it. We're rehearsing. I just don't know. I don't know if we can do it. I was like, it's going to work out. And then we got in there and bam.
Yeah, and earlier you had mentioned collaboration. The beauty of having the mics, right, is that, you know, I didn't have to worry about, okay, who's, you know, when we schedule, oh, I'm going to bang this again. When we're going to schedule the adults in the room and such, they had that handled. So I didn't, all I had to focus on was, you know, getting the kids ready. And they handled all the other details. Like, we wanted TV so they didn't have to show it on their laptops. And they had all that. So that collaboration really makes for a better project.
I'm glad you said that, because, like, it was collaboration between Mike and I and you. And I think the kids, there was collaboration there too. I mean, there's collaboration all around. But, I mean, I'm lucky to have Mike Rosa a part of this team, because there were some ideas, like the three of us together, it really, like, Mike Rosa would be like, well, what do you think of this? I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. Or, like, the behind the scenes things, like getting the TVs, like Mike rolling down TVs the hallway. We're thinking through how to hook this up, how to do this, how to set up the room. That's all the stuff that we didn't really talk about on the case with you, like behind the scenes. But, you know, the students putting the effort in of coming that Friday to do research, and then them showing up to school to do the presentation, them working together during the presentation. I mean, I think that collaborative effort is something that Finneytown has really, like, allowed to happen. Because, like,
yeah.
what you said much more about being in your classroom, like, you mm-hmm. didn't either seek it out. I mean, I collaborate a lot in the band world, but it had been cool if I'd have been able to collaborate with an English teacher. And that's possible now, too. Like, this project was in your classroom, right? It was about math. But I'm excited in the future, like, what milestones could we get somebody else to kind of participate in and partner in
yeah.
to make the next project next year even cooler?
Yeah, maybe cross-curricular or something, you know,
yeah.
English.
That's what I heard. With
yeah.
I mean, I think English, if you write something about it or, mm-hmm. or bring in some of the standards for presenting, but also, and, you know, maybe they could rehearse in their English classes their presentation. But I also heard the historical context when I was actually there, and through the questions you and the other adults in the audience were asking, to hear the kids talk about what was going on in the world, society, with politics, all those factors playing into baseball was really cool. So I don't know. I started thinking about your neighbor Pierce maybe jumping in with you in that angle, but it's just cool to hear about the ways I think we are all shifting a little bit to allow for that collaboration to happen more frequently, because, right, it makes sense. It produces better results for the kids.
Yeah, and you reminded me that the other point behind getting the kids to practice their presence, getting them there after school, was we had kids doing similar topics, but they were in different bells. And so part of that, which the piece of that Friday afternoon was they were organized by topic. So you had everybody doing people of color at the same table so they could go, you know, what did you find? And what did they could share with each other. That's right. In addition to practicing and getting them to pitch to each other, it was so that they could talk to other people who were doing what they were doing so that they could collaborate amongst different bells. Kids that, you know, maybe may not hang out, yeah, know each other, had to sit at the table and talk. Yeah.
What a story.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, we're going to close it out here, Phil. I'm going to ask you a question, actually using one of your favorite sayings. You dropped it already in the podcast, so it was perfect setup for right now. And then we're going to do some rapid fire to close out.
Uh-oh, you're going to make me think.
Well, here's the question. We're going to make you, reflect, some thinking about yourself. So we're going to challenge you with your favorite saying or one of your favorite sayings, and that being what you said earlier, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. But it seems like maybe that's not so true. So what have you learned about yourself? What has Phil Farr learned about Phil Farr from the PBL experience this year in collaboration with Mike and Mike?
Oh, man, that's... what have I learned about myself? I guess I would say it's okay to kind of let go of control. I like kind of knowing what's going on. Let go of control. It's okay to try something and have it go, I didn't quite land as I wanted it to. Because when you do that, you know, there's always a silver lining. There's always just some things that pop out. Like I mentioned the JT thing. The People of Color graph was, there were so many cool stories in that.
Yeah, right.
So I've learned that, okay, you know what? Next time somebody asks me, what was it, the Jen Dinan thing? Lean into discomfort?
Yeah.
All right, I'll lean in and see what happens. Yeah. So that's what I learned.
And that fits perfectly with this season's theme, taking a risk. So
it sure does.
Giving up control, yeah. All right, thanks for that reflection, Phil. Okay, two rapid-fire questions here. I'm kind of excited about these questions. These are, like, fun, silly ones to close it out. These are Dave Muchmore classics, and so anybody who knows me closely knows that my father can he can just come up with some wild ones here and there. And this might be how he spends his free time, just thinking of these random things. But here's the first one, MK. You can take the second one. My father recently went on vacation with my mom during spring break. They went and traveled down to Gulf Shores. I called him just to see how they were doing on the drive back. Before I can get out two words, he says, "Hey, Eric," he says, "what do you think? What percent of vacation travel to the beach would drop if the ocean had no waves?" If the ocean had no waves, what percent of tourism to the beach would drop?
Man, he is driving through some boring country if that's what he's thinking about.
He was so excited to ask me that because he wanted to argue with me.
He wanted to debate
about
it,
this. Huh? Yeah, and we probably spent 30 minutes talking about it.
Huh.
But what percentage of tourism to the beach do you think would drop if the ocean had no waves, Phil?
I'm going small. I'm going 10, 15%. You go to a lake, the waves aren't anything significant, but tons of people. There's something about a water vacation, whether it's moving or not, that is just relaxing. So I'm going small, 10, 15%.
But still a drop.
Oh, yeah. Got to have a little bit because some people go to, you know, surf or boogie board.
That's true.
So,
all right, here's the second one.
Good math question.
If you could find out one statistic from your life, what would it be?
One stat from my life?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Good luck.
I have no idea. One stat from my life. You know, how often I thought I was funny and just landed in and offended people. that's a higher number. So I tell a joke and it didn't land. That's probably the higher number than I think it is.
Frequently,
because I like a good joke. But yeah,
that's so perfect for your personality. You nailed it. Anybody knows Phil, that's right on.
Yeah, no doubt.
I love a good joke. Yeah,
that's good.
I like to tell him.
My dad wants to know his all-time, every single shot he's ever taken on a basketball hoop, what's his field goal percentage for life? That's what he wants.
Wow.
If he could have one wish.
Mine would be pretty low. Yeah. Lots of clinking and clanking.
Well, this has been fun. I want to say to the audience and to you personally, thank you for what you did for the kids.
Well, right back at you.
Seriously. Yeah.
This could not have happened had you guys not had the, well, the experience and the structure. And it's getting even better as you have that book you you introduced me to. So
yeah, we're learning a lot together. We learned a lot from you. So thank you for doing
Appreciate it.
Appreciate you.
Well, Phil, thanks for taking time out of your day during your plan bell to come down to the podcast room, sit and have a good conversation with the two of us. Mike Rosa, we've mentioned him a lot. He's our producer. Can't fail to recognize him over there working the switcher for our video version of this podcast, which you can find on YouTube. And also you can hear us on Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio and Apple Podcasts as well. So thanks for listening. Keep tuning in. More stories to come here from Finneytown Local School District. Take care.
Finneytown is a place that truly thrives. We look beyond our students' differences and allow this to introduce new perspectives and experiences to our lives. It's a place where we value student voice and presence. Our teachers, staff, and parents work together to create an inclusive school culture where all students can feel safe to learn and gain the knowledge they need to excel throughout life. It's a place where we are better together. We grow, we live, we thrive. We are Finneytown. Let's go Wildcats.